Oh, we love a different land, especially these days. We're dashing into gift season, and our next guests have all kinds of cool gift ideas for those that you're shopping for, or even if you're simply shopping for yourself. This morning, we have three booksellers from two bookstores joining us with books we should pay attention to. This week, we welcome Connie Brooks and Heather Boyne from Battenkill Books in Cambridge, New York. Hello, Connie. Hello, Heather.
Good morning.
A belated birthday. Happy birthday to Connie.
Aw, thanks.
Thank you. Did you have a lovely birthday?
I did.
Yesterday, belatedly, but I wish you a happy birthday. And we also welcome Matt Tannenbaum from the bookstore in Lenox, Massachusetts. Good morning, Matt. How are you?
Hello, Joe. Hi, girls.
Hello.
Oh, girls? I'm sorry. Hello, Connie, Heather. Very casual here in the Studio A today.
What am I going to do with you? How many seminars do I have to bring you to? Oh, Lord. All right. Well, we'll move on and forget that happened.
Yes. I'll go in the corner. It's
no,
okay.
I understand. Let's start with Connie to start us off. Thank you, Connie.
Since I had the birthday, sure.
Yes.
You can start me off. So,
yes.
So I begin with a novel. It's called The Heartbeat Library by Laura Imay Messina. Messina is an Italian novelist. She was born and raised in Rome, but she went to get her PhD in Tokyo University, fell in love, stayed. She currently lives in Japan. Her English language debut, The Phone Booth at the Edge of the World, sold in 21 countries and became an international bestseller. In her newest novel, The Heartbeat Library, we travel to the peaceful Japanese island of Teshima and its unique library, where the heartbeats of visitors from all around the world are recorded and archived. In this small, isolated building, the heartbeats of people who are still alive or who have already passed away continue to echo. Several miles away, in the ancient city of Kamakura, two lonely souls meet. Shuichi, a 40-year-old illustrator, who returns to his hometown to fix up the house of his recently deceased mother, and 8-year-old Kenta, a child who wanders like a shadow around Shuichi's house. Day by day, the trust between Shuichi and Kenta grows until they discover they share a bond that will tie them together for life, and their journey will lead them to Teshima and to the Library of Heartbeats. And Messina was inspired by the actual art installation in Japan that is called Les Archives du Cœur, the Archives of the Heart, and it is actually on the island of Teshima, and you can go and visit it.
Cool. Heartbeat Library by Laurel Messina. Thank you for that. All right, Matt.
Oh. Oh. I'm here.
You seem surprised as a guest on the show that we called on you. Have I forgotten in the past?
My first book today is The Universe in Verse, 15 Portals to Wonder Through Science and Poetry by Maria Popova. Do you know this book?
It's
a lovely, lovely book published by Story Publishers in North Adams, Berkshire, Massachusetts.
Yep.
The design is like an old-fashioned book design. We want to give a lot of credit to the design and to the editor, Hannah Fries, who is a poet who has actually read at the bookstore and reached out to Maria and had this book published. Mm-hmm. And it's 15 essays about science. And I have to say, you know, I don't know that much, but I learned something in every essay. And after every essay, there was a poem. So my favorite was, the favorite one that I have is because of my favorite poet, is an essay on Euclid and the elements and a poem by Edna St. Vincent Millay. Mm-hmm. And these are just Maria Popova, Brain Droppings, was that the name of her?
No, she's the Marginalia.
But wasn't it called something else?
It was Brain Pickings, I think, or something.
Pickings, not droppings.
I think Brain Droppings was a George Carlin book.
That's right.
She was amazing. Yes.
That's right, yeah. So that's a lovely, lovely book published by Story, The Universe in Verse.
Excellent.
by Maria Popova. All right, Heather, you're up.
All right. I decided this week to talk about some books that feed your soul.
All right.
My first selection is The World in Books, 52 Works of Great Short Nonfiction by Kenneth Davis. Davis is a prolific history writer and the originator of very popular title, Don't Know Much About History or Geography, whole series of books that help explain in entertaining ways what we all missed in high school. Now, I imagine that some people do not put pleasure reading and nonfiction in the same sentence sometimes, but The World of Books offers a wide-ranging historical education through pleasure reading. And it's not simply just for pleasure reading. Davis is very clear about the reason he wrote this book. He says, "We live in an era where some people believe that books are dangerous and that the enemies of books want to limit the spread of ideas for the simple reason is that books make us think." So what does he suggest we read? Well, he offers a selection of 52 short but provocative works. He curates the world's most influential and profound thinkers and writers and their consequential ideas. All of them fit roughly into a 200-page limit. They range across important ideas like racism, fascism, sexism, socialism, authoritarianism, along with religious freedom and creativity. Each chapter contains an excerpt, a summary, comments about the author, why you should read it, and best of all, what to read next. Short nonfiction engages us, makes us think, helps us to refocus, and primes us for longer, more challenging efforts. So this is your chance to feed your mind and challenge yourself to a new and apparently dangerous idea.
The name of the new book is The World in Books, 52 Works of Great Short Nonfiction by Kenneth Davis. Connie.
So I have another novel. I think I brought all novels today. Yeah. So mine is The Bog Wife by Kay Chronister. And Chronister's newest novel takes us to the Appalachian Hills of West Virginia. And there we meet the Hadsley family, whose ancestors have tended the local cranberry bog for generations. However, unlike other local farmers, and in what can only be described as a Shirley Jacksonian twist, you learn that the Hadsley family is governed by a strict covenant with the bog that is renewed each generation with the ritual sacrifice of the patriarch. In exchange for this sacrifice, the bog produces a bog wife, a woman brought to life from vegetation who is meant to carry on the family line. But this year, the bog has either failed or refused to honor the bargain, leaving a group of siblings bereft, scared, and at each other's throats as they vie for survival.
Wow. Okay. The Bog Wife by Kay Chronister. Matthew.
The Goniff. Oh. Who here's a Goniff? The Goniff is a new book, the fifth book in this series of Amos Parisman, old Jewish semi-retired detective in Los Angeles. The Goniff is his latest book, and it's a treat. A Goniff is a thief, the Yiddish word for thief, kind of a vernacular, like Uncle Harry, he's a Goniff, that kind of guy.
Yeah.
So this is the story of a 200-year-old Torah that has been absconded with. And we don't know who did it, why they did it. And Andy, what Andy does with these books is he's a fan of the old gumshoe fiction, and his character is kind of a hard-boiled guy, but he's also a soft-hearted old Jew from L.A. who brings his own philosophy into almost every chapter. He has a little musing. He has a Mexican sidekick who is maybe illegal and helps him do illegal things and keeps him on the up and up also. And Andy's an old friend of mine. He and his wife apprenticed at my bookshop years and years ago before they went out to California and opened up their own shop, Reader's Books in Sonoma. So The Goniff by Andy Weinberger, published by Prospect Park Books.
Excellent. It looks great. I was looking at it before the show. It looks terrific. I turned to Matt and I said, "There's four of these that I didn't know about." My fault.
I'm not keeping Joe up on the latest gun-ups.
Although then he said, "I think I brought one in before." I must have been emotionally out that day. Heather.
All right. Second selection is Elysian Kitchens. Recipes inspired by the traditions and tastes of the world's sacred spaces by Jody Eddy. Eddy is a professionally trained chef, a James Beard Award nominated, and an IACP award winning author of 7 cookbooks, as well as a prolific Food Journal contributor. While traveling through the Indian Himalayas after the sudden death of her mother, Eddy started discovering connections in the experiences of the religious community at the Tibetan Buddhist monastery where she was staying and the monks of St. John's University in her hometown in Minnesota. She was inspired to explore the intersection of culture, spirituality, and cuisine. Her 100 recipes include diverse selections from a Buddhist temple in India, from Kylemore Abbey in Ireland, from a Jewish community in Brooklyn, from Sufis in Morocco, and from a 1,100-year-old Spanish monastery, just to name a few. The large format is perfect for showcasing beautiful photography. The peace and calmness of the various sacred spaces is illustrated in sweeping panoramic images. It is perfect for those of us who like to read cookbooks. All of us know a foodie who has their extensive collection of cookbooks and everything from Julia Child to molecular gastronomy. But Elysian Kitchens examines a gastronomic heritage that has, until now, been virtually unexplored. There is nothing like it out there, so it makes the perfect gift. Feed your soul. Make connections. This book is a tonic.
Oh, I'm okay with the tonic idea. It's by Jody Eddy.
Hey, Jody Eddy.
Excellent. All right. For Connie?
Yeah, sure. I can take the next one. I have The Frozen River, a novel by Ariel Lawhorn. And this story is based on an actual person. And it tells the story of the midwife and healer Martha Ballard in Kennebec, Maine, in the winter of 1789. A prolific diarist, both in actual life and in this fictionalized version, Ballard chronicles every birth and death, crime and debacle that happens in the close-knit community in rural Maine. As the novel opens, Ballard is summoned to examine a body found frozen in the river ice and to determine the cause of death. Months earlier, Ballard has chronicled in her diary the details of a rape allegedly committed by two of the town's most respected gentlemen, one of whom who has now been found dead in the ice. And just as gripping a read as this novel is by Ariel Lawhorn, Martha Ballard's actual diary is no less fascinating. You can easily find a transcribed version of the diary online at dohistory.org. But for a far richer experience, I would point you to the 1991 book, The Midwife's Tale, The Life of Martha Ballard, based on her diary. And it's by the historian Laurel Thatcher Ulrich. Ulrich's portrait of Ballard won a Pulitzer Prize and provides an intimate look at medical practices, sexual mores, household economics, and religious rivalries of the New England frontier. They are both wonderful. It doesn't matter which one you read first, but for a trip into history.
And the new book is The Frozen
River. The Frozen River is
by
the new one.
Ariel Lawhorn. All right. Matt.
Jimmy Breslin, The Man Who Told the Truth. Anybody know Jimmy Breslin?
Yeah.
The Daily News columnist?
Yeah.
He started off at Long Island Newsday, I think, the same place Robert Caro started.
That's right.
And they went in different ways.
Was a guest on this program a few times.
Breslin,
sat in the very chair you're sitting in now.
He and I went drinking one night back in 1969 after he lost the primary to run for the president of the city council, along with Norman Mailer, who was running for mayor. This book, and then
who paid?
Jimmy wow. paid for me, his wife Rosemary, Carol Gottlieb, who later became city council president. Wow. This was at Mucci's Bar down on South Street when I was a young would-be journalist covering the Lindsay campaign.
Was this before or after the stabbing?
This was long after the stabbing.
Okay.
Oh yeah, Norman. Right. Norman was that was. I never got to know Norman.
Okay.
But I never went out drinking with Norman Mailer.
All right.
My mother double dated with somebody who he knew. That's as close as I got. But Jimmy Breslin and I went out drinking after during the John Lindsay campaign. This is a memoir of him, the man who told the truth. Jimmy Breslin walked into his editor's office and said, according to Richard Esposito, "Don't confuse me with the facts. I want the truth."
Yeah.
And Breslin, so you knew him. You met him. Sat here.
He was great.
A cigar chomping guy. We had a great time.
When I said he was great, he was very entertaining. I was intimidated. I think maybe a lot of people were intimidated by him.
Oh, just a couple of beers and you forget the whole thing. But this book is, I don't know who Richard Esposito is, but he...
Sort of how I look at this show. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, my.
This book is so overwritten because Esposito wants to mimic Breslin because they knew each other. At one point, he says, "Breslin's papers ink might rub off on your fingers, but the people came alive in your face." So that's a Breslin-ish kind of a line.
Now, you have a book somewhat tangentially related to that one. Would you like to talk about that now?
The Village Voice book?
Yes.
Village Voices. Village Voices by Odile Hellier, a memoir of a bookshop in Paris that I didn't even know existed. It was there for 30 years.
No relation to what I thought it was.
No, not at all. But published by Seven Stories Press. This is a bookstore book.
Right.
This is about a bookstore, and it's the transcript of all the readers all the writers who came and read there.
And
we should all be reading this book. Thank you for getting me in there.
Village Voices, a memoir of the Village Voice. And it does say bookshop. And I didn't see that part. And also before that, Jimmy Breslin, The Man Who Told the Truth by Richard Esposito. And Matt doing a little review of the book, too, which is kind of fun. Connie, go ahead.
Sure. My last one that I brought in today, this will make such a lovely gift book for the holidays. This is Bel Canto, but an annotated edition by Ann Patchett. And as beloved a writer as Ann Patchett is, and for as many books as she's written in the past several decades, I know that I'm not the only reader of hers for whom her 2001 novel, Bel Canto, is still the favorite of them all. Set in an unnamed South American country at the home of the vice president, it is the story of a lavish birthday party honoring Mr. Hosokawa, a powerful Japanese businessman. Roxanne Kass, opera's most revered soprano, has enthralled the international guests with a mesmerizing performance. The evening is perfect until a band of gun-wielding terrorists takes the entire party hostage. Now, more than two decades after its publication, Patchett revisits her early work in a special annotated edition. She reflects on her phrasing, explains references, and in general opens the story to readers, giving us an intimate view into the writing process. It's also a mature writer reflecting on the work of a younger self. She sometimes praises herself for a turn of phrase, but more often calls herself out for an awkward word choice or a too-wordy paragraph. It's an absolute joy to read. The annotations are handwritten in the margins of the book, and it would make a lovely gift for anyone who hasn't read Bel Canto, anyone who hasn't loved it, any aspiring writer that you know.
Oh, it's terrific. I love Ann Patchett so much. It is Bel Canto, annotated edition, a novel. All right. Heather.
All right. So my next recommendation is Julia Child's Kitchen, The Design, Tools, Stories, and Legacy of an Iconic Space by Paula Johnson and foreword by Jacques Pepin. This book is a tribute to Julia Child's legacy. Author Paula Johnson is one of the original collectors and keepers of the replica of Julia Child's Cambridge, Massachusetts kitchen that is on display at the Smithsonian National Museum of Art or American History in Washington, D.C. In 2001, Julia donated the entire kitchen containing more than 1,000 parts and pieces, tools, appliances, utensils, furniture, artwork, knickknacks, books.
What'd she do after that? Go out to dinner?
Nope, she retired. She retired. I have to say that this book hits every OCD librarian button in my brain. All of these items are pictured, cataloged, described, researched. More than just another book about food, it's a delight to anyone who cooks, but also to anyone who loves reading about and understanding the methodology of a master of their craft and all of the tools that are fundamental to their process. It's a love story to an iconic woman and the people at the museum who do their very own magic to keep her legacy alive.
If you've never seen the exhibit, it's one of the great exhibits.
Yeah.
I think on the first floor, main floor of the American History Museum, and you can walk in. There's sort of these portholes.
Yeah.
You look into it and see and all of these things that are out there. Oh, that's marvelous. They've cataloged everything.
I just think, you know, there's a book about the person, but then there's the book about the people who have kept this.
Yes.
This beautiful, I don't know, object almost, like this beautiful place where you can go and pay homage to somebody and all of the tools that they had to use.
Because when you're there, you feel like she's just jumped in the car to go to the store to get
some
cornstarch.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, we're out of time. But I mention Billy.
Yeah. New book, Billy Callis' new book, Water, Water.
Excellent.
I read the whole thing 2 nights ago. You know, it takes a couple hours, and you want to reread them. Can I mention one thing? We're having an event at the bookstore on December 15th. I forgot to tell you. Melissa Newman has put together a book of photographs of her parents, Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward, December 15th at 4 p.m. in Lenox.
Very nice. I want to quickly mention that I'll be interviewing Billy Collins at Page Hall in Albany on Monday.
Wow.
Part of the New York State Writers Institute and Water, Water by Billy Collins. Anything else I want to...
No, just come on out for Plaid Friday and Small Business Saturday after you've had your turkeys and your stuffing and your potatoes.
Battenkillbooks.com, bookstore in Lenox.com. All of our book picks are posted online at wamc.org/roundtable, wamc.org/roundtable. Thanks to you all for being here. A great pleasure.